This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to a brand new week of Double Tap, the final week before our holidays. It's Monday, it's the 29th of April, 2024, and today we're getting into your feedback and learning about Tape It, the recorder app.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you today?
Deafened, Stephen Scott, deafened. How are you, sir?
I was a little bit late on the button there. Yeah,
you're not on holiday yet, you know. Come on, know, keep it snappy. Let's keep going.
It feels like I'm already there. It honestly feels like I'm on that plane and I'm soaring in the sky watching comedies from the 1970s, probably. Because you know what airplanes are like, right? It's always this weird mix of stuff that tends to appear on those in-flight movie systems. And of course, none of it will be audio described. And it'll be touchscreen and, you know.
Well, there is Jaws for kiosks, obviously, and maybe that will be implemented. No, it won't. Probably not. Won't. Actually, no.
Definitely not. The closest I'm getting to Jaws is the movie.
Oh, that's a very good. Well done, you.
Thank you. Listen, lots to talk about today on the show because we're joined a bit later by Thomas Walter, who is one of the co-founders of the Tape It Recorder app. Oh. You've been playing with this new app, haven't you?
I have. I didn't say playing with it. I've downloaded it and gone through the initial setup, so I am a hero. And I keep getting emails from Thomas now, which is great, giving me tips and tricks. And it seems very good. I haven't used it properly yet, but it seems very cool. Another alternative to something like just press record or voice memos, obviously.
Yeah, well, the story behind the app is very interesting. And I got a chance to catch up with Thomas just end of last week. And you might have noticed if you are using the app, you'll have had an update. Some more details on that in the interview today. And some interesting conversation as well to come around this subject of 32-bit float, which I hear a lot about when it comes to recording. You know, you often hear people say, oh, best thing to do is record with 32-bit float. And basically, the suggestion is that it means that if you were to accidentally, record too loudly and you ended up with a little bit of a, you know, how can I put it, a distortion in your
clippage.
Recording.
Yes,
clippage. You can resolve it. I haven't quite figured out how that works yet, but apparently it's a thing. However, the interesting story that comes from Thomas a bit later is the actual value of that kind of tool. So we'll get into that today. Looking forward to that, actually. It's a really interesting conversation. Thomas is an amazing guy, and we'll talk to him about the story of the app and how it ended up becoming more accessible to blind people. And it all started with a Canadian.
Oh, of course, everything does.
You see, keep everyone on side. That's what I say. Keep everyone on side. So let's get into this because we've got a lot of emails. Emails. Let's get some emails.
Hey. We get emails. We get your emails every day.
Every day.
Here's your mail today.
Hey.
I think if I'm ever sectioned at any point in my life, I think that's the tune that's going to be playing in my head on repeat, and that'll be what leads to it. I honestly believe that.
That jingle's always playing in my head. It's beautiful.
There you go. You're halfway there then, right? Okay, let's get into some of your messages. Stan has been in touch following my comments on TikTok the other day.
Good morning, everyone. This is Stan Warren Luttrell. I'm commenting on the latest episode of Double Tap. I have a comment, and I'm more in agreement with Sean on this, but Stephen opined about TikTok being addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say the same thing about what people said about radio, what people said about television, what people said about rock and roll. Because remember, I'm a fossil, so I can say that. But I can also say that I hope you have a nice vacation. Take care. Bye for now.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We take vacation at the end of this week. So we will be here holiday. Up until Friday. So don't worry, we'll be. I know we call it holiday, but everyone else
holiday.
North America calls it vacation. Oh. I'm trying to be more international.
Oh, well done. You are an international jet setter playboy. Well done, Stephen Scott. And thank you, Stan, or shall I say SWL? I like that, it's better. SWL is absolutely right. He agrees with me. We've always looked for distractions in our lives, but newspapers, TV, at rock and roll with those saucy hips. You know, everyone rails against it. It's a generational thing.
Saucy hips. Sounds like a good band, actually. I'll probably check out their music. I can't agree with that. I'm sorry. Wow. I just cannot agree with that. I mean, come on. I don't ever remember, you know, hours upon hours upon hours of people's lives being wasted, ignorant people being born out of newspapers. You know, oh, hang on, I can't talk to you right now because I'm checking the newspaper. I don't think that happened. I don't think that was ever a thing. I don't think rock and roll music, as much as people may enjoy it, made people listen to it on repeat for months and months at a time. I just don't see the equivalency. Okay. I'm sorry. It's just, to me, it's a different thing. It has got such addictive properties to it. It has this. I get what you're talking about from the point of view of social media. If you talk about social media being another platform, then yes, I can see what you mean about newspaper, radio, television. You know, they said the same thing about all of those things. Absolutely. Thank but you. It's the addictive quality of social media that is different to everything that Stan mentioned.
Not. Are you saying that Class A narcotics are not the same as something like a cup of coffee, for example? I mean, it's exactly the same level, isn't it?
Massively different. No, it's massively different, I think you'd find, for lots and lots of reasons, namely the lawyers. You might actually agree with me for once on this one.
No, I'm highlighting the point. You are absolutely right. Of course, there's differences there, but it's a different angle. When we're talking about addictiveness versus something making people ignorant, as you were talking, you know, people not paying attention to things because they're distracted by another thing. There's always been something there. But yeah, you are right when it comes to the level of addiction. Absolutely.
I'd go further. I mean, I would say, yes, it is TikTok, it is social media, but it's the phone. It's the actual phone itself that's created people who are, let's just be honest, a little bit ignorant these days. You know, the phone created that world where we're just isolated into this bubble.
There's always
couples sitting across from each other. You know, it's couples sitting across from each other in restaurants, texting each other rather than actually talk.
Generational.
I mean,
generational.
Are you real? Are you serious?
What if that couple was sat across from each other reading books?
But that's a pastime.
That's a pastime. That's, well, this is the new pastime. Get with it, daddy-o. This is the new pastime.
No. I'm not talking about a pastime. I'm talking about communication. I'm saying you're sitting across from me, and the only way you're going to communicate with me is via a device that you're holding in your hand. Can't you just lift up your head and speak?
I agree with you.
Do you know that there's actual courses now at universities? No. There are courses to teach people how to be sociable, how to communicate with one another. That's what the smartphone has created. That's the evil that it's created.
Okay, all right.
That's the reality of it.
There's always been rude, ignorant people. All right.
Yeah, but now they all just hide behind phones.
And before they were hiding behind something else.
Behind the newspaper.
Yes.
This doesn't really equate, if I'm honest. Anyway, thank you for that, Stan. I appreciate it. And of course, you can listen to that conversation on our website as well. We're posting a lot of the individual stories we're talking about there. So you can go check out that story if you missed it. George has been in touch.
Hello. Thanks for the great podcast. On a recent episode, Stephen mentioned the difficulty of checking the images used for the Double Tap website without Be My Eyes.
Mm.
In relation to the more general question of web design, I wondered whether you or the Double Tap audience had any tips for being able to design a professional website accessibly from a blindness perspective. I have no coding background, and I understand that websites can be designed with WordPress. However, as I understand it, this requires visual templates and themes to be used. Are there any tools that anyone would recommend, or is it simply a case of having to engage a web designer when you're blind or low vision due to the visual elements involved? Thanks in advance for any info. Kind regards. George.
Thank you, George. Sean, you're it.
Oh, wow, sorry. I was tuned out there for a minute. I was just going to get a drink. I thought Stephen will take this one. Well, actually, it's a really interesting question because thanks to CMS or content management systems, as they're called, like WordPress and what's the other one called? Joomla or something.
Drupal.
Thank you very much.
No, Drupal. That's the. I was going to say that's the drag star, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
I'm thinking
right.
of someone else.
Yeah,
RuPaul. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, I don't think RuPaul owns a web development
you
company.
Don't know.
Well, you never know.
Right.
You never
okay.
know.
No,
exactly.
Don't me off.
People.
Stop it. There are these systems out there that are very, very popular for creating websites. WordPress in particular, and. Thankfully, accessibility has been thought about when it comes to how we can create them. I'm talking as a screen reader user, obviously. Very accessible dashboard, the back end, and you can create one quite easily. But as you rightfully said, there's also that visual aspect. And why I say this is interesting is because a lot of the themes out there, especially the ones that come pre-installed with WordPress, are accessible by their nature. The headings will be all labeled and everything. So you don't really have to worry about it. But we've talked about this, Stephen, when we've been designing websites and looking at websites. Who's it aimed at? Do the visuals actually matter? I mean, we've talked about websites in the past which are just simply plain text, right? If we're aiming at a visually impaired audience, do they actually care? It's all about ease of navigation. But if you want to make your website as accessible and inclusive as possible, then I think you do need to take the visuals into consideration. And thankfully, as I said, I think if anyone wants to correct me on this, I think all of the visual themes that come with WordPress are accessible by nature. Now, there's so many different elements and modules to a theme. You know, do you want a sidebar in there? Do you want some sort of widget? It's really difficult to say they are all accessible, but it's just something you can test out yourself. But when it comes to getting the visuals, I don't know if there's a way around it other than getting a pair of eyes onto it. How does this look?
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I'm with you 100% on all this. The problem is, in my head, all I'm thinking right now is that, you know, I missed a great opportunity to say that Drupal was actually RuPaul's brother. In my head now, that's all I can
You've
think.
You've been waiting for me to shut up so you could come
yes,
back with that.
That's
I was five
all
minutes
I've been thinking
ago.
About.
Forget about it. Look, the important thing is that actually, if you are totally blind or low vision, you can create these by yourself. As I said, I've got experience of WordPress at least, and I know that is accessible both. Well, I'm saying that I haven't actually used it in a year or two, but I think it is accessible on Mac and Windows. So there is another issue, though. There's installing WordPress in the first place on your web hosting company. I mean, there are some, I find, more accessibility issues trying to actually, you know, log into your control panel of your hosting space, for example. So, there are difficulties to overcome, but you can do it.
Thanks for that, George. And if you do have any thoughts on this, anyone out there wants to get back in touch and let us know about what you're doing. Perhaps you're building a website yourself and you've managed to create one that appears to be quite, you know, visually friendly and fully accessible as well.
Visually friendly? I like that.
Visually friendly.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm friends with visual people.
Of course, you can code by hand just by, you know, a normal notepad, a text editor, and using some HTML. But it's less appealing, I think.
Yeah, order yourself some tablet stone and chalk from Amazon and crack on. Thanks, George. ET's been in touch. He hasn't phoned in. He's emailed in.
Hi, Stephen and Sean. It's the ET again. I just wanted to give a little feedback on your April 25th podcast, starting with TikTok. I'm not sure what TikTok is. I think it's something that the Chinese government is using to influence people, especially kids. If they get that influence early, as they get older and older and become adults, they're hooked on this stuff. And they start to believe that a government, like in China, is okay. I might be off the wall. You can say so, no worries. I'm like you, Steve. Doesn't matter, it just kind of flows off. This may be somewhat controversial. Hitler, before the war, put radios in every German household that was possible. This was to influence and literally brainwash people. And look what we had. We have World War II in our past. I'm not so sure that China may not be trying to do the same thing, influence the young people to start thinking a different way. Plus, I don't trust China as far as I can throw my house. And my house isn't that big, but it's too heavy for me to throw. Lol. I am 100% on side with you guys when it comes to new devices, especially technical devices that are supposed to help us, and we can put the white cane aside and never use it again. I know this is not going to work. Look at our technology. None of it's safe yet. I'm sure one day we'll maybe get there, but I think I'll be gone. Will the new WW can be waterproof? Will it manage to be used in snow or the heat? Maybe you're somewhere where it's 110 outside. This is what we want to see. Is it going to work? I can't afford to spend the money to try it, only to find out that it doesn't work. Like I say, I'm on your side. So, Microsoft must need money. Wow, I don't know how many billions of dollars they make, but yeah, we better get the ads in there. And yes, Stephen, I guess $5 maybe or something for a subscription so you don't have ads. That's just what they want to hear. Some of these big companies have so much money, they bathe in it. I would not pay the $5 a month out of principle. No way. On the subject of vision loss, when to give up a license if you ever have one, etc. I managed to get my license at the age of 17. When they did the test, they had this weird wire with a red ball on it to check my field vision. The lady put your chin on this little plate here and she moved this thing back and forth from side to side, moved it so fast that by the time I said it disappeared, it was almost at the back of my head. She then said, oh, you have good field vision. You can have your license. I was restricted from night driving because of RP. I was in my glory. I drove and I don't know how many incidents that were close calls. I know I'm able to admit these things. I even would drive at night from my job about 2 kilometres home with my Volkswagen Bug with its candle lights for headlights, and I would try and follow the white line on the road, go around the bend, couldn't see where I was going. I just felt my way around like I was using a cane, but the car was my cane. I would go over the hill and see the reflection on the sign further down the road and knew the third sign was where I would turn left, and I'd grope my way around there with my car until I got home. I was stubborn, but I needed a job. Then came the day I had to give it up. That was the hardest day of my life. 1 year later, I went home and I spent 4 days in mourning. I cried. I swore. I swore down it wasn't giving my license, but like you said, Stephen, I thought 4 days later, what if I killed someone or myself? I have to give it up. At that point, I decided I have to embrace this, and I did. But that's not for everybody, and it is still difficult, even though it's embraced, not being able to ever drive again. I am 71, and I would love to get behind the wheel of a vehicle and tear around like I used to. Anyway, my email's been quite long. I want to wish you well on your time off, Stephen. Hopefully, there's lots of KFC available for you. Sean, you're on your own. You got to find your own KFC. Hope you guys enjoy your time off. Take care. Alma Thiessen, the original E.T.
Thank you, E.T. Wow, that's quite an email.
That's scary, I've got to say. But like we said when we were discussing this, you know, you almost want to vilify that mindset, right? I'm feeling my way around, using a car like a cane. And you think, oh my God, but we've all been there. Like, you know, anything, the amount of old people I've knocked over in my lifetime, you know, by barging into them because I didn't see them. And the different responses you get from that. At some point, you got to say, okay, you know, I just need to accept this because otherwise I'm going to, you know, get hurt myself or hurt someone. It's tricky, though.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was the cane. It was the cane that did that for me. It was like I needed to admit that I needed it because I would have injured myself. And like you say, walking into people, that was a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrifying. It just amazes me to some degree that there's clearly quite a difference in the way or the amount of vision you need to be allowed to drive. But in saying that, I guess with RP, I don't know, but I'm guessing you can start off with a fair amount of vision and then obviously it degrades over time.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, like anything else, really, there's different extremes to it and people can be quite good for the longest time.
Everyone joins at the different
points. Yeah, exactly. Points, really. And the speed at which you lose it also, it can be pretty sudden or, you know, very, very gradual. So once you pass your test, it's that case of, you know, you don't notice it yourself. It's like this extra £200 I've put on. I didn't notice it until it was right in front of me. And it's the same thing. It's so difficult. I totally get it.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, there was a lot in there, EZ. I don't even know where to go with all of that. There's so much in there, but I think we'll just leave it.
I want to pick up on the Chinese and TikTok thing, and I think a lot of people have that same point of view, and I'm not going to argue against it. The only thing I would say, and like I said at the time, is if there's evidence for that, then absolutely. But if there isn't, it makes me slightly nervous.
I think a lot of it comes from lack of knowledge. I mean, most fear comes from the unknown, right? We don't really know what goes on in China. We don't fully understand how life is there, what goes on, what the Chinese government, and we're talking to the Chinese government here.
Well, I think we have an idea, right? But
yeah, we do. But I want to be clear. We're talking about the Chinese government or the Chinese people. I think we've got to draw a line here because we can kind of get into some, I think, dodgy territory when we start talking, China as a country.
No, yeah, of course, trust. Yeah, but.
What? Go on, say it.
Well, look, I totally get. We all have our preconceived ideas and notions. And look, living in the country or the culture that we live in, we're also, we get a story fed to us. You could argue about how bad someone is over there compared to how we are. Whatever it may be, and you've got to use your own sort of. You've got to balance that in your own mind. But as I said, it all comes down to evidence. If there's any evidence to something, then absolutely. Then do something about it. If there isn't, then what are we fighting against? We're fighting against ghosts here, against shadows. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say we're fighting against ghosts in this particular one, because look, this is, China has an agenda without a shadow of a doubt. The Chinese government, I should say, has an agenda beyond shadow of doubt. And what that agenda is known to China. But I don't know if I'd go so far to say, and I'm not up on this enough to know, but I wouldn't think I would go as far to say that the Chinese government has the same kind of attitude towards the West that Russia has, for example, in the sense that Russia definitely wants to put its hand on the scale and influence and make trouble for the West, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, that's kind of what Russia's modus operandi is, right? It's pretty much to cause and sow division. Although, in fairness, we seem to be pretty good at that ourselves.
Well, so there's countries around the world that say exactly the same about the UK.
Yeah, yeah,
it's all a matter of perception.
Well, it's all a matter of degrees, I think, when you get to that level.
Yeah.
Goodness me, this has become,
I'm out of my depth.
Become NPR all of a sudden? Right. Okay, let's move on. Evelyn has been in touch.
Hi, Double Tap friends. I was introduced to your podcast by a student friend of mine at the Vocational Rehabilitation Centre for the Blind where I work. I teach assistive technology and I am sighted. You're asking about guide dog schools in America. I know that three of the guide dogs that belong to instructors at our facility come from Guiding Eyes for the Blind. They are my favourite co-workers. Their website is www.guidingeyes.org. Guiding Eyes also comes to our centre occasionally to share information with our students. Our staff members love their Guiding Eyes reps. I have also met a couple of owners of Sweet Pups from Leader Dogs. Their website is www.leaderdog.org. Thanks for being awesome and sharing your tech news and stories.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Evelyn. Appreciate that. And glad you're with us.
That's very nice.
Jewel has been in touch.
Hi, Stephen and Sean. Jewel, J-E-W-E-L, please spell it out, Laura, no S. I am a country girl, raised on a homestead and going back to school soon for a degree in agriculture. I am also an avid nature walker and birder by ear. This is to say I don't tend to stay on the paved paths. I have been seeking solutions for a sturdy cane that I can take in the field, on hikes, and even in the great wilderness. I'm learning to navigate by nature. I briefly considered the all-terrain cane that you played a review of in the last episode, but for some of the reasons mentioned and more, I'm determined I would not find it helpful. However, I really do need something. I have splintered several white canes while doing my favourite activities. One got run over by a garden cart. Another got a boulder dropped on it because I forgot where I placed my cane and was moving a large rock, / small boulder, to see what was underneath. Worms and pill bugs, of course. And yet, another one wasn't permanently damaged but did lose its tip in the hollow under a tree root, never to be seen again. I have the added complication of having moderate to severe, depending on the weather, arthritis from hypermobile joints. I usually bring a support cane as well, which, if I have a sighted guide, can be used to sweep over roots and rocks at a pinch. So a mobility cane wouldn't need to hold my weight, but it needs to be light enough that it won't exhaust my arm after a short walk, where I'm swinging wide in a field or looking for the tree with the path marker. I also wonder if there are any compromise tips that I could use. Something that isn't so heavy as to tie my wrist and arm like a rollerball or marshmallow tip will, but that won't get caught on tall patches of grass or blackberry canes. I do enjoy the amusement of telling plants not to steal my cane, but it slows me down considerably, which is not always helpful. Thank you for playing the review of the all-terrain cane. It confirmed my thoughts on it, though, of course, the gentleman didn't seem to have the added complexity of arthritis to contend with. But my O&M instructor has been nudging me to try a sturdier cane with a bigger tip because she knows where I go and how many canes I've had to repair or replace thus far. Guilty as charged. Any advice you or your listeners can give would be greatly appreciated. Be good. If you can't be good at it.
Well, no chance of that around here. Thank you, Jill. Really appreciate that. I'm going to put that one out to the audience, I think, because
yes.
You know, I would have recommended All Terrain Cane. It sounded like the ideal solution for you.
Yeah.
But I'd be tempted to try it, though, Jill. I think that might be might be closer to the solution, because the problem is all other canes are not going to be up to the standard to cope with that, I wouldn't imagine.
No, and you keep killing them, so obviously they're not. I mean, it sounds like you've tried a few different ones. And something that did jump out to me was I'm determined that it's not going to be suitable for me. I mean, yeah, I would still be tempted to try it out. What have you got to lose? But yeah, with the added arthritis issues as well, I can totally understand I can't think of anything else out there, though. Because as soon as you start making things sturdy enough for something like you want to use it for, then you add weight to it, don't you?
Yeah, and that's a big problem. It's a big issue for me as well, because with the hand that has the essential tremor, which is also the hand I use the cane with, it's made that hand so weak that, you know, even going out for a wander to the shops, I come back, and of course with the vibrations of the cane in my hand, it causes me nothing but pain all day.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of fun.
We need a cane expert on here. That's what I want, because I still don't understand the whole range of tips and their different uses.
Well, we've got Aoife coming on. Aoife's coming on in
June.
That's
true.
So
yes.
We'll put this question to Aoife. If you can wait that long, Jewel, we will get Aoife on. She is an O&M instructor. She will help us out with this, I'm sure. Okay, I want to get one more message in before we move on. This is from Mark.
Hi, team. Thanks so much for reading my email earlier this week on train travel and daily double taps down under. It was a pleasant surprise to make the podcast. The lovely Laura does a great job reading the emails. I'll certainly share my train experience later this year. I didn't know about PRM Assist, so good to always learn something new. I hope Stephen and Sean and the rest of the team enjoy your well-earned break and look forward to hearing you bright and refreshed on your return. I'm sure I'll find ways to keep up my dose of daily double tap down under in between dodging the kangaroos, crocodiles, sharks, snakes and spiders. Mind you, having an assistance kangaroo would be quite interesting, and you'd get the bonus of a built-in pouch to store your white cane.
Exactly.
Enjoy the break. Cheers. Mark Fisher, the guy from Perth, Australia.
Mind you, I might suggest you bring some wet wipes with you as well.
They're massive, aren't they, kangaroos? Aren't they like, you know, 7 foot tall or something?
Can you just like get on the back of it and it could just hop you to wherever you're going?
Yeah, what do they call
they
it?
Hop,
is it a papoose?
Kangaroos hop, don't they?
Yes, I believe they do. What do you mean?
I don't think they're big enough to get in the papoose. I don't think that's how big they are.
No, but if you could make one, couldn't you? A papoose for humans, and you just sort of sit. Yeah. We'll work on that in the double tap lads.
Yes, exactly. We can't even get a cane for someone that's right, but you want to create a papoose for a kangaroo. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Well,
right. Coming up next, we're going to meet Thomas Walter. He is behind the app.
We need a holiday.
He is here next. Yeah, not kidding.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Now, Tape It is an app that was designed for musicians, but it has caught the attention of the blindness community. Thomas Walter is one of the co-founders of the app and joins me now to talk about its development and Thomas's work learning voiceover. Great to have you here on Double Tap with me, Thomas.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is great to talk to you because I'm so excited to learn all about Tape It, because I saw the announcement of the app on applevis.com, which is a site that a lot of us blindies go to catch up with the latest news on cool apps, cool features, cool technologies that have either been built for blind people or have had blindness or blind people considered in their creation. And with your app, it wasn't intended to be an app that was for blind people, right? That wasn't the intention of it.
No, it wasn't. So the story of the app was almost 4 years ago now. I think, no, it's been 4 years. Wow. I called my old bass player, Jan. And Jan and I used to play together in an indie rock band over a decade ago. And Corona had just started. Everyone was stuck at home. I was getting rather bored, just like most of us in the world. And and I called Jan and said, Jan, this is really silly. Why don't we build the music software making app that we want? And something that we saw and that we had observed over our young lives, I'd say, was that pretty much every musician we know is recording their song ideas on the phone all the time. And this is true for amateur musicians, but this is also true all the way to Taylor Swift. Like if you watch the Taylor Swift documentary, you see her in the studio playing voice memos to her producer. And so many famous artists that we talk to in the process of building this use voice memos. Like pretty much everyone is on the phone all the time, particularly on tour, but also when they're not on tour and just at home. And it was such a remarkably unpolished recording app. Everyone we talked to, and of course, including ourselves, I had this love-hate relationship with it because it's like it's really easy to record something, but you never find anything. It's called New Recording 550, 551, 552. At some point, Apple had this idea of naming by location, and that might work for some people, but almost everybody we spoke to was like, and don't name it by location, because then it's your home address, 551, 552. If you look at it from a software perspective, it is very much like photography was 20 years ago. So people bought cameras and had these SD cards, and then the photos on these SD cards, there was no thumbnail, it was just a file name, and the file name was DCIM for digital camera image underscore 0550, 0551, 05, it was .jpeg. Yeah. And then you had to open everyone separately in order to see what was actually in it. And yeah, it seemed like 20 years of development have happened to photography, but for some reason not to audio recording.
Yeah. And that is very true. And of course, it's interesting from our perspective because a lot of the reasons blind people grab their iPhone to record something is because we want to record a soundscape, and we want to record an experience, almost our audio postcard, if you like. And we want to make sure that's recorded in the highest quality. And for a lot of people, what we've had to do over the years is go out and buy specialist audio recorders that we hope are accessible to us when we have a fantastic audio recorder in our hands. So the question I have for you is, how are you able to get the best out of the iPhone? Because it does have, the new ones do have stereo microphones, right?
Yes, they do. I mean, that's the other thing of that story. If I told somebody, just to finish the camera analogy, and of course, for blind people, it may not be so interesting, but you have observed that in your surroundings from the people around you. 20 years ago, if you told somebody, hey, I'm going to make a photo with my phone, people would have said, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. Today, if you tell them to buy a camera, they look at you like, why should I? I have a phone.
Yeah.
But everybody who records something, and even we are recording this podcast, and we both bought microphones for it. All right. Like everybody who records audio and is somewhat serious about it goes out and buys a microphone. If I tell them, yeah, you could use your phone, that sounds crazy. And now, if you look at the camera development, it doesn't take that much imagination that, of course, we'll have the same development in audio. And as you said, the irony of it being that the iPhone has absurdly good microphones in it, and in fact, several. So anything from the iPhone XS or SE second edition or iPhone XR onward, it's just like 5-6 year old at this point, has three microphones. And they sound really, really good. It depends on how you configure them. And Apple by default configures it for maximum legibility. Is that a word? Legibility? Intelligibility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is where you can tell I'm German and not British.
Well, I'm Scottish, so I barely speak English, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, but going back to the microphones, by default, they're, you know, that's quite heavy compression. And if you use it as like a dictaphone, as a note taker, that's a good decision to make. Like it's reasonable to focus on just understanding it well, but if you're trying to catch the atmosphere, the sound of the moment, then that's not a good decision. And for music, of course, you want a really high quality sound. And so one of the things we did in Tapeit was to configure the microphones to record in stereo. And it very much, it's not about left and right, really. We keep the image very small so that you don't get funny left-right panning when you listen to it and have to worry a lot about how exactly you place it. It's really just about much better dynamic range, much more clarity, much less equalization that isn't focused only on speech. Just a very nice and neutral representation of the sound that you heard.
So almost taking away a lot of the compression and leaving it natural and just using those microphones in their raw state. Because, you know, for a lot of musicians who do spend money on serious microphones, they often don't want all of that compression. It's all, you know, I've worked with audio engineers in the past who say, turn all that rubbish off and just give me the raw audio. Speakers, I have a pair of speakers, KRK monitors in my studio here. And, you know, I've set them to flat response. I don't want them to give me any extra oomph or bass or processing. I want to hear it as it sounds, because then I know where I'm starting from. As an editor, I'm listening to something from that bass level. That's important. But it's becoming important. And of course, for blind people, audio is our 4K video.
Yes, it is. It is exactly that, right? I mean, this is, that probably is the segue into how we, you know, discovered or how we started making an app for blind people, like accessible with VoiceOver. It was like 1.5 years ago, I think, or 1 year ago. I don't fully remember. A guy called Conan, a Canadian person, reached out to us and with a lot of praise and asking for a few improvements for VoiceOver, but he really, really loved it. And he told us that he's blind and for him, this is like his memory box. And so it was incredibly heartwarming. And then we were like, oh, how does he use it? How does VoiceOver even work? And then we tried it. And Jesus, it was rubbish. Like, oh my God.
And it's wow. Like,
you know, we have certain, like, there's certain navigation states in the app. And like on some of them, it would show you both the old and the new state. And then with VoiceOver, you had like all the various buttons that you could go through. Like it wouldn't only show you the new state. It would still show you the old shit underneath. It was confusing as hell. And to this day, I wonder how I was able to use it. And so it's like the three main people behind Tapeit. This is Jan, Chris, and I. Chris is a designer. And then a few more people who helped us out along the way. And we were laughing so hard. We were also a little bit embarrassed. But then,
but you didn't know, right? You didn't know.
No, we didn't know. But then we just picked up the phone, like old school landline phone, and called him. And he helped us understand a VoiceOver. And it wasn't so much effort, actually, to get it to work, roughly. And then that's been... Yeah, and ever since, we actually got more and more emails from blind people saying like, hey, this is really nice. And a friend of mine recently told me about AppleVis, and I hadn't known about AppleVis. And so then I just posted it there. It was really interesting on the feedback because I still discovered lots of stuff that we can improve. And in fact, there's an update coming out. Better rotor support, magic tab, stuff like this that I didn't know before this weekend. So
there's a lot in the toolbox, isn't there? There's a lot of different aspects, a lot of navigational elements that you can make it easier for us in so many ways. But actually, as a developer, you need to know that exists in order
to benefit
from it.
Yeah. I mean, there's one thing, there's one feature added to Rotor, which is so good, and you don't have it if you have vision. So Tapeit, again, is like half of it is the recording quality. The other half is organization. And the list of your recordings is grouped by month. But if you cite it, you just have to scroll from month to month. And it's the same in Apple Photos. But with Rotor, I can just switch from heading to heading. And I go from like April to March and it's crazy fast. So I implemented this today, literally today. And it's got my head spinning. I was like, wow, how do I add this to cited people? Because I actually don't know.
You've made something that actually works really well for the blind people and not for the sighted people.
I think, you know, we'll just keep it as a win for the blind people.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I mean, you know, getting that feedback, what does it feel like when you go on to AppleVis and you read? Because I was reading through the comments as well. And you know, you will find this when blind people get access to something and they feel, and I say they, I mean, I'm including myself in this, we feel that someone's listening. What does it feel like to you as a developer when you find out that there are all these tools in the toolbox that you can make this app available to so many people that who would have never even thought could use this?
interestingly, like I received some, there was one person in particular on Apple that was really harsh on that thread where I posted it. And that was actually scary. I have to say that. Mm. But then I also received quite a lot of support, some of it public, a lot of it actually via email. I thought a lot about whether I would even raise this today, because I'm not a huge fan of, you know, throwing guilt around. But what I do want to say was, it meant so much to me when people also publicly stepped in and then defended and said, like, look, you know, let's assume good intent, and not just via email, because it's almost always like this on the internet. That's not specific to Apple. This, like, this is like, you can App Store reviews or anything like this. We always get the praise via email private and then the shit public. But it meant a lot to me. Like, I can't tell you how much, like, it, this stuff gets, like, you know, it does get emotional for me too. Like, you know, it's a new community. I don't know the people there. I don't know the standards. I don't know, like, so, you know, you engage. That is the real scary bit, really, with any kind of community. Like, it just, you're always stepping into a new group of people and you're trying to be nice-ish, knowing that probably you do something wrong. But that, I think, was really scary.
There's nasty people in every group, and that is the reality. But there is actually some comfort in that for you. That, and I take heart from that, the fact that you say that people stepped up and said, hey, back off.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And I mean, like, I think that person that was rather negative, that person also has probably like some anger, and I'm not going to dehumanize that person. Like, I think it's very clear. I can see that people get frustrated when,
like I said to you earlier, I said this to you earlier, you know, that there are oftentimes, a lot of times, we face those brick walls and we don't get response, or, you know, someone has great intentions, builds an app, and then, you know, does a couple of updates, forgets about the accessibility. Suddenly the app is a closed door for us. This happens every day. Every Windows update, every Mac update, every iOS update comes with something that blocks or bricks something else. And it's a constant fight. And the problem is, for our community, you know, these are not showstoppers for the bigger community of people. So, for example, you know, if an iOS update came through which stopped an iPhone screen from working, you'd better bet that would be fixed within a day. But if Braille stops working when connected to an iPhone, that'll take months to get fixed. And that's a major way of that blind person, you know, using that device.
Yeah. So it breaks the device.
These are the irritants that come along.
Yeah.
And I'm not excusing this person's behavior at all.
No, but I think what you say checks out. What I actually thought was interesting, as I develop VoiceOver now and as I debug it, I do actually agree that it is more brittle than the standard iPhone experience. So when I turn on VoiceOver, like now I turn it on and off all the time to switch between the modes. If I do that too often, sometimes the bloody iPhone freezes for a minute, which I've never seen before. So, you know, here's just the point of, it's not hypothetical what you just described. Like, even I can see it in just developing VoiceOver support.
Let's get geeky for a second and talk about the way this works, because I want to dig in a bit more. So I want to understand how you're harnessing these microphones, because it feels to me as if what Tape-It is doing is it's making it possible to get even better audio quality out of my iPhone.
Yeah.
So talk me through the process of how that's actually possible.
The way this works, you know, a lot of credit goes to Apple for making this possible in the first place. But the way that this works is you have two microphones. So we use the front top microphone. This is in your earpiece and the front of the display at the top of the iPhone, but front facing. And the bottom microphone, which is at the bottom of the iPhone facing to the bottom. And when you combine those two microphones, you don't get a natural left-right image, right? Unless you rotate your phone. But even then, it's a bit weird because one's pointing to the left and one's pointing towards you on the right side.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can use those two microphones to triangulate where the sound source comes from. So sound travels at a certain speed. And if I can measure that this bit of sound arrived at one microphone earlier than at the other, then I can kind of know at which angle it came in. Because the difference in time is strictly correlated to the angle. The thing I then don't know is it going to be on the left side or on the right side? But because they're slightly off center, those microphones, you can also figure that out. So this is basically how it works. You have two microphones and you triangulate the position of the actual sound source by measuring the time delay. And there's a very old technique called beamforming, and it's actually what cell phone towers do when they try to optimize the signal for your cell phone. And this is how you can locate somebody on when they're connected to several cell phone towers, and I know where in between those they are just based on the time between them. So that's called beamforming, really old school technique from the 70s. And you can use it to create a proper stereo image from two weirdly placed microphones.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah.
And again, you know, most of the credit for that goes to Apple for putting those microphones in and like the beamform support. And they actually put in like, yeah. Anyway, before I nerd out too much.
It's cool. I suppose in my own head, I thought you were using AI. Because everyone's using AI right?
Okay, so AI,
so I thought you were using AI to pull it all in and, you know, kind of measure it all out and then just give you the amazing sound.
So maybe a bit of background on me. My background is in AI. I studied music software in Stanford. And then I sold my last company to Spotify, which was an AI company. And we were one of the very first companies in the field. So there's like certain libraries that you use for AI training. And we added some of the foundational building blocks for audio to it. So that's my OG claim here. Since everyone's talking about it, I think I need to brag a little bit to build up a little bit of street cred to give that some weight. If you look at AI over, it's not a new thing, right? If you look at AI over decades, the thing you always see is that expectations change. We had chess computers in the 90s and people said like, oh, if a chess computer comes out, then it will dominate the world. Like it's going to decide how we make wars and stuff like this. And it's a chess computer. You get it for $4 at Walmart.
Right? Yes.
I mean, people are even debating. There's a Turing test from Turing, the famous computer science scientist, which is like, it's a test where that you give to a machine. And if the machine is so good at answering that you can't tell the difference between it being a machine and a man, then it passed the Turing test. But turns out the original Turing test definitions were too focused on the human-computer interface. And things like a computer speaking back to you was recently considered, oh yeah, it passed the Turing test. But really, it's just a speech computer, right? You know, a speech synthesizer. We're completely used to the fact already that computers can talk now. Like that was complete sci-fi 10, 20 years ago. Expectations shift. And with that, AI also shifts. So what you say isn't AI, completely was AI earlier on. But it's not of the modern large language model-based or diffusion model-based AIs. And we actually have developed some AI stuff that isn't in the app yet. You can try it on our website if you go to tape.it, IT. There's a denoiser, which is a noise reduction software. And that one combines modern AI with old-school signal processing. And we did that because it runs on device, but also it has really high quality results. And it's just a very simple noise reduction system, but one that works at exceptionally high quality. So for those of you who produce music, there's an industry standard called Isotope RX, which everybody uses, but you have to be an expert to use it.
Yeah.
And we took that and we made it automatic. And
wow,
that's going to land in the app soon as well, or soon-ish.
So you are free to everybody, but you have a subscription tier, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So talk about that, explain that to people.
So it's a classic freemium app. I think it's become a bit of a swear word these days, but I hope our offer is rather honest. We thought about it a little bit like Dropbox. You know, nobody has the free tier of Dropbox, thinks that they don't have Dropbox, but those that pay for Dropbox, they're also completely happy paying for Dropbox. In our case, space isn't the limiting factor, but we put a lot of the basic functionality into the app and then like the better recording quality or some extra features that are more like you're going to use it a lot, then you probably use those features. That's what we put in the pay tier. And the pay tier is $30 a year, $6 a month, or there's even a lifetime purchase right now, which is roughly the price of 3 years.
Amazing.
And subscription pricing is something, or one-time pricing is something we also battled with a lot. I mean, Apple pushes app developers quite heavily towards subscription. I have to say now, I start to get it. I've been quite negative about it, but it's the truth is just that because iOS changes so much, as you said, you know, voiceover breaks with every major update or something like this. It's the same for us. I mean, literally every update that comes out, we beta test the hell out of it and realize, oh, we again have to fix something. And sometimes they fix stuff and they don't tell you. So we have some users on iOS 16 that it's a lot of ongoing work. So what seems to you as a user of like, oh, it just stays the same, requires a fair amount of maintenance for it to just stay the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I get it. Like, I actually think, and in many ways, it lowers the barrier of entry compared to what desktop software used to cost, like, you know, hundreds of dollars before you even know whether you like it. But but the free tier is also free. Like, you can also just use a free tier. I think for many blind people, probably the pay tier will be more interesting because that's where you get the stereo recording. There's also lossless audio recording, which I would only recommend if you drag things into the studio software afterwards. Like, the audio quality difference is so tiny that I would save the phone space.
But that you can record lossless at 32-bit float, can't you?
You can. But, I mean, I was explaining the bitrate thing in the Apple's forums. So what bitrate really is it defines the noise floor on your recording. And so this is a little bit like, think of like a cassette or a vinyl, they always have a little bit of noise. In fact, like your average cassette that you bought had about 6-bit. And the vinyl, like a really, really high quality brand new vinyl, has maybe 11-bit. And every additional bit doubles or like halves the noise. So from 11 to 14 bit, we're not like 30% lower, but it's an eighth lower. Like the noise is an eighth. So if you go from 16 to 24 bit, it is insane. And from 16 to 32 bit, it's not half the noise floor. It is like ridiculously low. Even at 16 bit, I mean, this is 96 decibel headroom for those of you who are audio engineers. It's quite a lot. Most microphones have a noise floor that is much higher than that. And if your existing noise floor of what you record is higher, the additional noise, it doesn't add up because those are rounding errors. They don't add. They're just hidden. So it doesn't matter.
Would you even hear them anyway?
You can't hear it. Like, is what I'm saying. Like, if your mic already has more noise, then you can't hear it. And I was quoting, like, in that AppleVis forum, I posted a link to, like, a popular entry-level-ish, like, $200 audio interface. And that audio interface, like, the line-ins have a good enough signal-to-noise ratio that 24-bit recording makes sense, 32-bit doesn't. But if you activate the microphone preamps, then the noise floor is so high just from the preamps that even 16-bit is way more than you need. And the reason we store at 32-bit is because we actually would love to do 24. It's like, all right, we'll give you the 24 just so you have peace of mind. But Apple's encoder ignores the flag. And so they all store with 32-bit. It's a complete waste of space. And you can feel very proud about having 32-bit, but you can't hear it. Like, there is no way on earth you're going to hear that. So 32-bit makes sense for internal processing. If you have studio software and you have lots of audio effects, because like it's always rounding errors. And if you have lots of effects, those rounding errors start adding up.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense. But when you store it to disk, it doesn't. It just doesn't.
I mean, someone recording a soundscape for themselves or recording a speech at a conference and using their phone with this app to do it, you're not going to notice any difference at all, are you?
No, 8-bit would be enough for them.
Yeah.
Like, I think people hear 8-bit and they think about 8-bit Game Boy music, but that's a completely different thing. That's like how the music is written. That has nothing to do with how you store the audio on disk. Again, your cassette had 6-bit, so... I think that is such a
wonderful explanation of that, because a lot of people, I think, just love to throw these terms around. They don't fully understand what they mean or what the value is. It's just, it's a bigger number, it sounds better. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean,
it's also
the practicality here.
At some point, like, audio gear is so good that you kind of have to get into esoteric land in order to sell something new. Like, the same goes for sample rates. People buy stuff with higher sample rates. The only reason you would ever want to record in higher sample rates is if you pitch it down. for a sighted person, that would be like having a camera that can capture infrared light. But I can't see infrared light, right? Unless I go start shift the colors to make it visible. Yeah, that's cool. But that's the same with like 96 kilohertz. So I can't hear it 48 kilohertz. I'm not a bat. If I pitch shift it down by 3 octaves, then I can. Then I can hear it. And so people in film actually need it. Like you have like those massive squeaking doors or things like this, and they record at really high sample rates and then they pitch it down by several octaves. And then you need the high frequency content from the higher sample rates because they're suddenly in the audible spectrum. So for those use cases, it makes a lot of sense to have higher sample rates. But if you don't edit the audio afterwards with pitch shifting, particularly shift down, you cannot hear the difference. Like there's no way. It just doesn't. There's lots of I mean I love audio in this regard because it's, you know, people get into it and then they start learning about it, but there's so much wrong information out there.
Yeah,
I find it rather entertaining.
Thomas, it's been great talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming on, and I wish you all the best with it. Come back soon.
Yes, thank you, Stephen.
And that is it for today. Sean, I'm sure you're going to go and check out all those updates.
Yes, absolutely.
That Thomas was talking about, because they're now available.
How cool is that, though? It was so interesting to hear that from a developer's point of view about, you know, coming to VoiceOver fresh or blind, if you like. That was so cool. Yeah.
But always remember, developers are humans too.
Yes.
And I mean that in the nicest way, because honestly, you know, I think sometimes when we go on to companies and we start shouting our mouth off about issues and problems, we kind of forget there's a person behind it as well.
Yeah.
So, always good to remember that. Listen, that's it for today. Back tomorrow with lots more. Do keep your feedback coming. feedback@doubletaponair.com. You have just got a few days left to get your feedback in before we wrap up for the break. So if you've got something to say, say it now. feedback@doubletaponair.com or call 1-877-803-4567. Catch you tomorrow, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.